One of the interesting things, I interact mostly with church folk, but on occasion I have some very, very good friends who have either rejected the faith or have never had faith in the first place. And yet, of all the folk that I interact with, it's very interesting to hear what kind of religious stuff comes from those who are purportedly unbelievers. And perhaps the most oft-quoted passage I hear from unbelievers is the passage before us. Don't judge, lest you be judged. Someone might not know anything else about the sacred scripture, but they've got that verse down pat. Don't judge, lest ye be judged. And what that usually means is don't judge me. And sometimes the unbeliever uses that rightly. They're being inappropriately condemned by others, and they ought not be judged. But I've heard this quote also used very wrongly to defend harmful and inexcusable behavior. So as much as we find that phrase, judge not, lest ye be judged, on the lips of unbelievers, perhaps it would be helpful if we understood as believers, we ought to be quoting it far more often. It ought to be something that's found on our lips very often, because it's part of carrying out Jesus' mission to the world. This Sermon on the Plain is Jesus preparing his apostles as apprentices to carry on his mission once he's gone. And these are the three first lessons. We're now at the third lesson, and that's how important judge not lest ye be judged is. It's significant and central to the mission of Jesus in the world. You may remember 2 weeks ago we looked at the first lesson. Remember the poor. They're guest of honor at God's banquet in God's kingdom. So don't ignore their plight. Make sure you have the generous heart toward them that God has as well. The second lesson was last week. That tough lesson, love your enemies. Why? So that you might be merciful as God is merciful. This third lesson is just an extension of that mercy when Jesus says, verse 37, do not judge and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you'll be forgiven. Give, and it'll be given back to you. And then he gives this abundant life picture that if you live in this way, not judging, not condemning, but forgiving and giving, this picture of grain being poured into someone's shirt as they hold open their robe and the grain is poured in, but it just overflows. It's this abundance that they receive because they are doing the right thing. So Jesus places great importance on this, judge not lest you be judged. And if we're going to understand what Jesus is saying, the first thing we have to do is distinguish something that's very important, to make a distinction between being judgmental and making judgments, or judgmentalism and condemnation in contrast to just simply making judgments or discerning. Judgmentalism is what is being condemned here, because making judgments is essential to the human condition. We all make judgments. In fact, if you'll allow me to blow your mind, you can't embrace the teaching, judge not lest you be judged, without making a judgment. You have to judge that that's the right thing to do. You have to discern that that is the proper way to live. So we are always discerning. We're always making judgments. That's different from being judgmental or judgmentalism. Terry Cooper, I think, gives a good example of the distinction that I'm trying to make here. He says, a world without judgments would be a world without conviction, principles, and ethical concerns. Regardless of how flexible and open-minded we may want to be, we cannot have a concept of the good life without a picture of what is detrimental and destructive to that good life. What sort of people would we be if we never made any moral judgments? And at the end of the day, you just simply can't be neutral or open-minded about some things. We all draw a line somewhere. You can't be neutral or open-minded about rape. You can't be neutral or open-minded about pedophilia or sexual abuse or murder. There is a time when we talk about being judgmental that we have to realize that even the most open-minded among us draw the line somewhere, because in making moral evaluations, you have to in some way make some kind of judgment. We cannot say of the rapist, who are we to judge? We have to realize that is opposed to the good life, to the way things ought to be. So when Jesus says, do not judge, he's not talking about judgment discernment, but he is talking about condemning. And he actually says that. Do not judge, you'll not be judged. Do not condemn. We're talking about a particular kind of judgment, which I'm going to call judgmentalism. And when we talk about judgmentalism, we can ask what it is and why we do it, because we're all guilty of it. What it is it is the habit of constantly finding fault with others. It is a destructive criticism that's harsh and petty in its fault-finding. And because the person is always so critical, all relationships are eroded around that person. Because judgmentalism strangles love. It strangles mercy. It strangles compassion. You will not have mercy for someone that you're condemning. You will not have compassion for someone that you instantly are condemning because you found enough fault with this harsh criticism that we carry around to assume they just deserve nothing but our scorn. So judgmentalism is this habit of constantly finding fault in others, and the reason we do it is very simple, although it's hard to face this reason. But it makes us feel morally superior, makes us feel intellectually superior, it makes us sometimes sadly feel spiritually superior, because we are making these judgments over others. We judge others because at the end of the day, like everything we do, it makes us feel better about ourselves. We elevate ourselves by bringing others down. When in the fact of the matter is, we shouldn't be comparing ourselves to others in the first place. One of the things that we have to just kind of root down in as believers is the target we're shooting for is Jesus. He's the one we should compare ourselves to. And when we compare ourselves to Jesus, or God's mercy abundantly expressed through Jesus or throughout the entire sacred story of the Scriptures, we realize that we have no place to throw stones at others or condemn others. And when we think we're elevating ourselves by judging another and raising ourselves up, it's really only an illusion. We are the blind leading the blind. Which is why Jesus has these two wonderful parables there in our second paragraph. He wants to show how judgmentalism just completely ruins life for not only ourselves, but for everyone around us. Because when judgmentalism takes over, you have the blind leading the blind. When a leader can see no more than the one that he or she is leading, then there's only future. There's only disaster in the future. We're unable to help others when we're blind to our own faults and shortcomings. God, save us from the leader who thinks they are so confidently and certainly right that everyone is fair game to condemn and to crush. Because a good leader that's going to lead others, for every finger they point at someone, they ought to remember there's three pointing back at them. In fact, you can keep yourself mindful of this just by always looking at your hand, unless you're like Russ and you got two fingers on one hand. Same thing, though. It's that you're... There's still double the amount, or if not triple, that you're pointing, and yet for every point we make, there ought to be at least three times or two times the critical self-evaluation of, you know, am I justified in doing this? Have I thought through the whole issue? Have I tried to understand where this person is at as I've thought about their environmental conditions, their genetic conditions, their social conditions? Have I thought about their economic situation? Have I thought about where they might have been that morning, just in their mood emotionally? So that there is this sense that if we are not thinking of those things, we have no self-critical component in ourselves, we end up leading others in a very wrong way because we're just throwing condemnations out willy-nilly, assuming that everyone who follows us is going to share that same condemnation. Jesus takes this one step further when he says something that you can be assured the crowd that was listening to him laughed about. Because we're so familiar with it, we don't see the humor, but it was definitely humorful when he says in verse 41, "Why do you see the speck in your neighbor's eye, but do not notice the log in your own?" And it's that kind of idea. I love the surgeons about ready to take out a splinter from this poor guy's eye. And of course, it's not like he's seeing the best himself. This whole idea of a log in one's eye, a speck in another's, is the idea that a slight imperfection in another person is always more apparent to us than the large problems in our own lives. Everyone else's problems are always bigger than our own. Jesus is showing us that deep-seated tendency we all have to minimize our own faults and maximize others' faults. Because we don't see objectively. We see through our own prejudices. We see through our own situation. I can excuse myself for cutting into you in traffic because I'm late. But God forbid you'd ever cut in me in traffic, because then you're a fill-in-the-blank whatever the name. God forbid that you'd be such a troublesome person at the cash register and so, you know, troubled and angry when, you know, I'm tired. You know, when I'm tired, I excuse myself, but this person might be tired. They might have got ripped off. They might have been experiencing an extreme injustice. They might have lost a loved one that day. I mean, there's all kinds of things that we just don't think about that we know in our own self that allow us to justify our own behavior. So we minimize our faults. I have a good excuse to behave the way I do. And we maximize others' faults because we simply won't give them any slack whatsoever. That's the idea behind the log in the eye, the speck in the other. And by the way, isn't it interesting that even when we hear this parable, you can see your own sinfulness in this. We think that we're the ones with the speck. We just assume, yeah, we're the ones with the speck. No, Jesus' point is his disciples are going to have logs in their eyes. He's speaking to his disciples. He's speaking to them about leadership. He wants them to be aware of themselves and critical of themselves and understanding that they shouldn't be throwing out condemnation. They should instead be showing mercy and compassion and grace, just as Jesus will do throughout his entire ministry. Jesus wants his followers to know what we need to know, that the danger is for all of us, that everyone's guilty, that we all have wood in our eyes. We're all in the same boat. We never completely eliminate judgmentalism from our lives, and thus we always have to work on eliminating the tendency of ourselves to focus on others' faults and be more critical of them than we are of our own. It's our problem. It's not their problem. Martin Marty is a wonderful sociologist and a pastor, and he wrote a book on fundamentalism. And in that book on fundamentalism, he studied all different kinds of religious fundamentalism and social fundamentalism and political fundamentalism, and he was trying to come up with a definition. What is at the heart of fundamentalism? And his conclusion was at the heart of fundamentalism is one thing, this rugged sense that I am certain I'm right. And being so certain one is right, you then have absolutely no tolerance for any other view, and you don't even want to hear any justification for other view, because your certainty of being right mandates that all opposing views be silenced. They cannot be allowed to have a voice because there's only one right view and I'm confident of it. Now, what's interesting about fundamentalism, and Martin Marty, who's a progressive, came to this conclusion. Fundamentalism is a condition on both the right and the left. You do not have to be conservative to be certain. You can be as doggedly certain on the left and fundamentalist in that expression as anyone on the right. Just because, and I know some in this congregation would espouse this, others wouldn't, just because we're progressive doesn't mean that we somehow have transcended judgmentalism. You can be dogmatically opposed to dogmatism. I know some seminary students like that. Dogmatically opposed to dogmatism. I know some pastors like that. That their chief dogma is nothing is, you know, completely so true that the church ought to give assent to it. You know, it's all up for grabs. Well, where's discernment there? Where's judgment? In the name of not being judgmental, we've kind of thrown out any kind of judgment whatsoever. You can be intolerant of intolerance. You can be fanatical about fanaticism. You can be a narrow-minded defender of open-mindedness, trying to silence all other voices because you're so certain that yours is right. Jesus is trying to get us to see that we're all in the same boat. There's no us and them. We're all in the same situation. We all are wrestling with the logs in our eyes and the specks in others' eyes. It's something that we're going to have to wrestle with all of our days. I love how the Museum of Tolerance in Los Angeles expresses this. They express it so well. If you go to the Museum of Tolerance in Los Angeles, there are two doors to get in. Over the top of one door, it says prejudiced. Over the top of the other door, it says unprejudiced. Which are you going to enter in? Now, you might find it interesting, if you try to enter the unprejudiced door, a sign will come up and say, think. Now use the other door. Which is to say, we're all in the same boat. well, we all are trying to fight this spirit of condemnation instead of having a spirit of mercy and grace and openness and trying to understand the other. Instead, it's always easier to throw stones. It takes no skill or intellectual ability to throw stones. I mean, my dog can throw stones. It takes grace, compassion, love, mercy, the ability to sympathize and empathize, to try to understand that other voices may have some value to us, even when we are pretty well committed to a perspective that we might have. Jesus wants in these parables before us and in his teaching, his disciples, his followers, to be aware of their capacity for judgmentalism. And he wants us to do that so that we might make sure that as we lead in the way of Jesus, we are just as critical about ourselves as we are about others. And we are trying to be as discerning as possible before we begin to throw stones. That we do not judge, we do not condemn, we learn what it is to forgive and to give. Now, the significance of this as we draw this to a close, and I'll just put it as colloquially as I can, is we need to beware of our temptation to play God, because it's not our place to judge. Only God can do this. That's what the unbeliever often gets right when they quote this passage. Too many times they've been burnt by a church that is trying to play God, that's trying to judge before God makes God's final judgment, that's trying to condemn them before they've actually stood before the all-merciful, all-loving, all-knowing God who will evaluate with justice and mercy. We are not given that role of judge because we can't know the particulars of another's life like God does. We don't know the whole story. We don't know the hurts. We don't know the struggles. Isn't it so easy to condemn by saying they're a demon, they're a monster, they're so evil? Instead of saying, well, you know, they did have a life, they did have a mother, they did have an upbringing, they did have an environment, they did have an economic environment. There's all kinds of factors to bring in that we who throw the stones aren't aware of. And because we're not, Jesus is saying, make sure you don't throw the stones too quickly because you don't know their heart. And even if you did know their heart and you did know all those particulars, we'd never be in a position to condemn unless we'd led sinless lives. That's why my favorite story of Jesus when it comes to condemnation is when all the guys are around the sinful woman who's caught in adultery. Interestingly, they don't catch the male. They just got the female. But they got the female. They want to stone her. They want to kill her. And Jesus' answer is not to say, hey, you guys are so bad. You're so wrong. I condemn you. He lets their own heart do it. He says, let him who is without sin cast the first stone. If you're willing to stand under the same scrutiny that you're putting her under, that same scrutiny by your God in the end, then go right ahead. But isn't it the fact that we trust in a God who shows mercy, who knows our entire situation, who knows it all? The bottom line in condemning is we just cannot see clearly enough for the job. Whether it's a speck or a log in the eye, we just don't have the capacity to see the whole. That's why one of my favorite quotes, it's been attributed to Philo, it's been attributed to philosophers. You've heard it though, be kind, for everyone you know is fighting a great battle. One of the things I can be confident of every time I minister, every time I pray, every time I go to a hospital, every time I'm at a funeral, every time I'm at a wedding, anytime I'm anywhere, is there are people that are fighting great battles. That they can't voice, they don't want to even perhaps be aware of the depth of it. But everyone is, and the challenge that Jesus is inviting us to is not simply be kind for everyone's fighting a great battle. He puts it in different words. Be merciful as your Father in heaven is merciful. He wants the disciples that are his to follow the first impulse of not condemning, but showing compassion. And at the end of the day, as we kind of close the book on these three lessons from the school of Christ, isn't it interesting that all three teachings have as their common component, be merciful as God is merciful? Remember the poor, the ignored, the despised, the forgotten. Why? Because God is merciful. Love your enemies. Why? Because your Father is merciful. Be merciful. Don't condemn. Don't judge. Why? Because God is merciful. And indeed, it's that mercy that we celebrate at the Lord's table every month, that we receive the abundant mercy and grace of God, and then we take that same mercy out with us into the world in order that we might show the love and grace of Jesus Christ. Well, that's our third lesson. I want to wrap it up with this final thought, because we have looked at three lessons in a row, and Jesus does end his sermon with this call to action in that latter half, 6:43 through 49, on your bulletin. And basically he says this, act on what I've said. He says to us, to me and to you, because all of us are guilty of doing this, boy, love your enemies, don't judge, remember the poor. Nice ideal, Jesus. But holy cow, that's hard to live. And Jesus says, I'm not going to let you be excused by just simply hearing and thinking you've done the job because you've heard what I've said. Because those who hear and don't act are like the one whose house falls to splinters. But those who hear and do act, and the common denominator is both hear. Hearing's not enough. He invites us to act, and he won't let us excuse our actions by simply saying, it's too tall an order. It's too great a vision. Jesus instead says, I want you to think seriously about what I've said. Remember the poor, love your enemies, don't judge. And I want you to take at least small steps to lean into that kind of kingdom that Jesus is bringing, so that we as Christ followers might represent the Christ who has shown mercy to us, to the world. It's going to take practice, it'll take work, it'll take discipline, but guess what? Next on the agenda is Lent. And that's what that's all about. Making room, being disciplined, trying to find some new space for a new compassion and a new mercy in our lives. So with great delight, we move into our Lenten season with these lessons behind us, understanding that we need to act if we're to honor the Lord who has given us these commands.